Good morning, and welcome to the Tuesday, March 22, 2022 meeting of the House Education Finance Committee. Remote hearings such as this are held in accordance with House Rule 10.01. This rule has been posted online and is linked to in our public meeting notice on the House website. All remote hearings will be recorded and live streamed by House Public Information Services. Members have the contents of their virtual packets available to them, and for the public, these same materials have been posted online. Members, if you're looking for all of these items in one place, they're attached in the calendar event you have that Ms. Burt sent for today. To get on the list to be recognized by the chair, members using the Zoom interface have the ability to raise their hand via the app. Ms. Burt will place your name on the list to be recognized. Mr. Lee, would you please take the roll?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Roll call will commence now. Chair Davdy?
Present.
Representative Sandstead?
Present.
Representative Kreisha?
Present.
Representative Bennett?
Present.
Representative Daniels is excused. Representative Damuth?
Present.
Representative Drazkowski?
Present.
Representative Erickson?
Erickson, present.
Representative Feist?
Present.
Representative Jordan?
Present.
Representative Marquardt?
Marquardt, present.
Representative Mueller?
Mueller, present.
Representative Richardson? Representative Richardson? Representative Thompson?
Thompson, present.
Representative Wolgamott?
Wolgamott, present.
Representative Schoen?
Present.
Representative Joachim? Representative Joachim? All right, Mr. Chair, we have quorum.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lee. Members, for our first bill today, we have House File 27. Oh, I jumped ahead. My apologies. Representative Bennett, have you had an opportunity to review the minutes from our Thursday, March 17th meeting? And if so, would you like to move approval?
I have, Mr. Chair, and so moved.
Thank you very much, Representative Bennett. Any discussion to the Bennett motion? Seeing none, members, this is a voice vote. If you would please unmute. All those in favor of the Bennett motion approving the minutes from Thursday, March 17th, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. With that, motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Bennett. The minutes are approved. Now, for the first bill today, we have House File 2742 from Representative Berg. It's our intention to lay this bill over for further consideration and possible inclusion in a future omnibus bill by 11 a.m. Representative Jordan, would you like to make a motion to move House File 2742 before the committee to lay it over for further consideration and possible inclusion in a future omnibus bill?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Jordan. Representative Berg, welcome to the committee. Please introduce your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. House File 2742 is pretty straightforward. We know that many of our students aren't so-called traditional learners, and there are many different learning styles that we have. Unfortunately, it's hard to address all of those learning styles in one classroom. And so for some, like my youngest son, Jake, for many of you who've heard me tell this story, him getting over to the Alternative Learning Center in Burnsville to finish up his high school years was transformative for him. And being able to be in a class size of 12 or 15 versus 35 or 40 to get that individual attention was really necessary for him to be successful. And so that's just one way that some of our kiddos fall behind. And especially looking at what the last 2 years of the pandemic have done, we know that many of our students are struggling. And so what this bill does is change, just a small change to say that you don't age out of the public school system until age 22 from age 21. So it's a small change, but it does give some of our students just that little extra time to be successful. And so I think I have a couple of testifiers here today, and I'll turn the time over to them. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Berg. I do have a list of four testifiers. First one being Wendy Smith, Director of the Volunteers of America High School in Minneapolis. Ms. Smith, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. I am Wendy Smith, and I am the Director of Volunteers of America High School in Minneapolis. And I would like to thank Representative Dabney for welcoming testimony today. I would also like to thank Representative Byrd for bringing House File 2742 forward for consideration. As I said, I'm the Director of Volunteers of America High School. We're a state-approved alternative program contracting with Minneapolis Public Schools to serve students facing multiple barriers to success at school. At VOA, our highest graduation numbers occur in years 5, 6, 7, and sometimes 8 for students. Our school and students challenge the norm that all students can be ready for the world in 4 years, regardless of circumstance or available support networks. Our staff and organization recognize that many of our families live in or on the edge of crisis, whether occasionally or chronically, and due to factors greater than just our education system. As we're emerging from a global pandemic, so many more youth have joined the ranks of students on the edge of or in crisis, and the time for us to respond to this is now. This bill, which will allow students most impacted by allowing for an additional year to become graduation credit ready, this will show Minnesota students and families that they are worth a hopeful future. The idea of an additional year for students who demonstrate the greatest need is not new. At VOA, we make what I view as moral decisions regarding which students will have access to all the future opportunities a high school diploma allows. We have students who get within a credit of graduation and their 21-year timer goes off. We often choose to serve these students unfunded, which undermines our own sustainability. Right now, seniors and super seniors make up 80% of our student population. Of these seniors, 25 to 30% of them will be age 20 or older at the end of the current school year. Of these older students, 60% are not on track to graduate by June. Many will not finish at the 21 bell, so it's critical to create a pathway for educational recovery programs to do what they do best for these students, care for them, encourage them, teach and guide them to their diploma. What's also not regularly talked about with these students is that they're experiencing a loss of motivation, they have crippling anxiety associated with falling off track, there's a lot of self-doubt, worry, fear of not succeeding and living up to expectations. And then they also, many of them have let go of the idea of graduating because they don't feel like there's an apparent way to get there. Changing of these students' mindsets takes time and resources and care. It's not just students that need this time, but educators and licensed support staff need the time with these students to make as much impact as they possibly can. Just very quickly, in addition, many students who have recently accumulated the most credit and attendance losses are now shifting to the job market because it's widening and there's a workforce shortage. And so these students and their families are the ones that were most impacted by pandemic closures. So it's not surprising they're making the choice to work. Unfortunately, this means that students will further stretch their graduation timelines. It's imperative that we work with this reality, but more importantly, recognize that these students are working, but they're still coming to school and they still want to graduate. High school diploma is the key to hopeful futures, higher earnings, personal sustainability. So we continue to push programming boundaries to keep students on the graduation path. And we ask you to please consider this bill, a temporary timeline change in support of Minnesota students, their families, and our credit recovery schools. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Smith. Next, Brad Jensen, President of the Minnesota Association of Alternative Programs. Mr. Jensen, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Devaney, and members of the committee. My name is Brad Jensen. I am the president of the Minnesota Association of Alternative Programs. Thank you for allowing me to testify in support of House Bill 2742. MAP supports the extending the eligibility of public school enrollment for students of grades 9 through 12 during the 2021-22 or 22-23 school years. We know that COVID-19 has had a tremendous impact, like Wendy said, on students, and it's important that we give an additional time to finish their coursework. In our particular much smaller program in a rural area, we've had one or two students that did age out last year and could not complete their high school diploma requirements. They were within 1 to 3 credits of doing so, and now are unable to get back into the public school system to complete that diploma. We've had a number of our members bring visibility to us that they had a number of students that had to quit high school because of family needs, as was stated, to begin full-time employment to support family members, and would greatly appreciate this opportunity to get back into the public school system, because the adult, or although good, the adult basic education does not give every student the opportunity, especially at the 21-year mark, to finish their high school diploma when they only are a couple credits short. I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify today, and especially thank Representative Berg for carrying this bill. I would be happy to answer any questions by any member or committee members if you have any. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jensen. Next, Eric Cameron, a teacher. Mr. Cameron, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Well, thank you for everyone for this opportunity. My name's Eric Cameron. I'm a high school teacher at an area learning center in Roseville. I'm here to urge you to support House File 2742. This idea kind of came out of a conversation that my social studies team was having in one of our PLC meetings, and I'm lucky enough to live in Representative Berg's district and connect with her on this topic. So our team was reviewing student data during the pandemic, as we do during all of our PLC meetings. And we noticed some of our data was highlighting something that wasn't mentioned in the statewide and national discussions about COVID in school. And that was that students who were in their fifth year and beyond of high school were suffering from a greater decrease in their credit attainment and their attendance than their on grade level classmates in 9th through 12th grade. And we think this was missed through the bigger discussion because, you know, students who are 19, 20, and 21 just aren't normally part of the education discussion in the mainstream, even though they are an important segment of the school population. So in our efforts and attempt to connect and reconnect with these students, we learned that students who were behind grade level were more likely to pick up extra shifts or second job at work to support their families. They're more likely to spend their days supporting their younger siblings in distance learning, sacrificing their own education for that of their siblings. And others just saw these pandemic-related shifts, distance learning, as one more barrier that was between them and their diploma. And, you know, as some of the other speakers highlighted, kind of saw this as another obstacle that they might not be able to overcome, and lost hope that they would be able to graduate before they turned 21 and aged out. So thinking about all of this, and this isn't new news to anybody here, that the socioeconomic data for people with and without a high school diploma is dramatically different, that people who earn their high school diploma tend to have far better life outcomes than those who don't have their high school diploma. And this bill, while it would have a cost to it, would be a relatively small cost to the state budget, especially with the large surplus at the moment, in return to a huge payoff later in terms of the life outcomes for these students. As they move into adulthood and age and have their own families. So passing this bill and allowing students one additional year to earn their diploma, it not only makes financial sense, but it's the right thing to do. In my school and in my classroom, you know, when a student asks for a second chance on something, we don't say no to that second chance. And when they need more time on an assignment or a project, we don't say no to more time. If they want to improve and push beyond obstacles and to meet a goal, we always say yes and find ways to help them. So when they need more time, we give it to them. And when they need more hope, we give that to them too. And I hope that this committee and that the legislature and governor will do the same, because our students, they need a second chance. They need some time to improve, to overcome and meet their goal. And all they really need is a little bit more time and a little bit more hope to do so. So I urge you to pass this bill and allow students who are impacted by COVID one more year to meet their goals and to really start the rest of their lives with a high school diploma and on the path that would send them. It just makes sense. And from my point of view, it's the right thing to do. So thank you all for your time today. I really appreciate your consideration of this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Cameron. Last on my list, Nate Christensen, an English teacher at PYC Arts and Tech High School. Mr. Christensen, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Dabney. Thank you, Representative Berg, for bringing this, and thank you, everyone, for having me. I'm Nate Christen. I'm an English teacher at PYC Arts and Tech in North Minneapolis. I think the other speakers have already said, well, a lot of the reasons why students need more time in order to graduate. I thought I would just share some numbers that I had. Most specifically, we saw during the pandemic that our attendance rate fell from roughly 65% all the way down to 23%. That's roughly two-thirds of what our normal attendance would be during distance learning with all of the technological difficulties. Students just disengaged. And we've seen that tick back up to about 50% of where it was before the pandemic as students are coming back to school slowly and starting to engage more with online learning. But they have lost already, many of them, a year and a half of the time that they would have spent pursuing their high school diploma. And I truly believe they need just a little extra time in order to get back on track, readjust to being in school and to working on schoolwork and to pursuing that high school diploma. Thank you for considering this bill and thank you for having me.
Thank you, Mr. Christensen. Thank you for being here. Members, just note that Representative Joachim and Representative Richardson have joined us. When this hearing was published, the public was provided with opportunity to sign up to testify during the public portion of this hearing. We received no requests for public testimony. Questions from members? Representative Erickson, I see you have your hand up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This question is for Ms. Para. Ms. Para, is this session law or is this a statutory change that has a date certain? Or perhaps Ms. Para? Mr. Straub can answer.
I'm sorry, Ms. Para?
I'm sorry, Madam. Mr. Chair members, I can let Mr. Straub answer it.
Mr. Straub.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, the provision is put is codified in the statutes, but it's time limited to 2 years. But in terms of the drafting technique,
recording in progress, recording stopped.
It was drafted to the statute.
Representative
Erickson. Thank you, Mr. Straub. Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering if Representative Berg could answer this question.
Representative Berg?
Representative Berg, did you consider, although I certainly support this because I taught in ALC programs for 25 years before I retired, but did you consider what would happen if child support has a statement that it continues until the child graduates high school? You know, has there been any conversation about how this might affect the payment of child support, which typically, you know, would have a different factor?
Representative Berg?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Erickson. I had not thought about that. That is fascinating. I'm happy to work with Ms. Para or Mr. Straub on maybe language if we feel like that's necessary, but I hadn't considered that angle. Thank you for bringing that up. I can follow up.
Ms. Para, do you have insight to share on this one?
Mr. Chair, I would have to consult with our colleagues in House Research that staff the family law area because mm-hmm. I am not familiar enough with that.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Stumper question. Congratulations, Representative Erickson. Other questions from members? Seeing none, Representative Berg, do you have any closing comments?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to thank my constituent, Mr. Cameron, for bringing this forward. We connected right away on that. As I say, we became kindred spirits over this issue. It has a very personal tie to me. But what you've heard today, the different reasons that students have fallen behind, it's always been a thing, but it's exacerbated by the pandemic. And certainly You know, kids helping younger siblings, so putting their schoolwork aside, kids helping out by going to work to help pay for rent or food. I mean, there's just such a variety of different factors that weigh in on students' education. And I think as we're looking at many of the sort of ramifications on our students from this pandemic, giving them a little extra time to reach something that will mean the world to them as they move on through their life is such an easy thing for us to do for the success of our students. So I thank you for the time here, Mr. Chair, and I urge support from the members.
Thank you, Representative Berg. And with that, Representative Jordan renews her motion to lay over House File 2742 for possible inclusion or further consideration at a later date. Members, our next bill presentation will be hearing from Representative Hewitt about a bill that will provide grant funding for districts to offer emergency medical services courses to enrolled students to prepare them for certification in that field. It's our intention to take action on this bill by 11:30 a.m. Representative Richardson, would you like to make a motion to move House File 2031 before the committee and to refer it to health finance and policy?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Richardson. Representative Hewitt, before you introduce your bill, I understand you have an author's amendment you'd like to offer to get the bill in the shape you'd prefer. The chair moves the A1 amendment to be before the committee to put the bill in the shape that the author desires. Now that the A1 amendment is before us, Representative Hewitt, would you please describe it briefly?
This basically does some technical changes with dates and different things that the department wanted in the bill.
All right, thank you. Questions to the chair's motion on the A1 amendment for the author? Seeing none, members, this is a voice vote. If you would please unmute. All those in favor of the motion on the A1 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Thank you. Representative Hewitt, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Chair Dabney, and thank you, members. Representative Richardson, thanks for moving the motion. Members, as you know, this has been one of my pet projects this year, the whole field that's surrounding our emergency medical services and the audit that we've all just gotten back, we're very, upset about. This is one of those things that may help us a little bit get to where we need to go with EMS in our state. Right now, the way that an EMT basically becomes one is they can go to a vocational school, maybe they get sponsored by their department or some prospective way, but we really have lost touch with that because in every one of your districts, and I'm looking at all your photos right now, every one of your districts needs more EMTs. And you can tell by the bill that actually will be going through health this week that we're actually going to allow non-EMTs to drive right now because we just don't have enough. One of the successful programs that's actually happening in the state right now is our high school programs. And I'm really excited because I didn't know this when I moved to Rosemount, but we have one here right in Rosemount. And we have another one that I did know of when I used to work in the profession up in Morris, Minnesota. And so I don't want to get too dragged down because I have some great testifiers here today, Mr. Chair, that I'd like to let them tell their stories about how their programs have been working. Mr. Chair?
Yes, thank you, Representative Hewitt. Our first testifier is Josh Fisher from the Stevens County EMS. Mr. Fisher, after you introduce yourself, could you remind the chair where Stevens County is if I wanted to add it to my summer itinerary?
I'd be happy to, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for having me. My name is Josh Fisher. I'm the director of Stevens County Ambulance here in Morris, Minnesota. And we're on the far western edge of Minnesota, great pheasant hunting territory. So we'd love to have you come out and visit. I'm a paramedic. I'm also a 1997 graduate of the EMT class here at Morris Area High School. And I've worked in EMS since then. House File 2031, I think, allows us an opportunity to make an impact. One of the major factors of the crisis we are facing in EMS right now is recruitment and retention of qualified people. One reason for that is the need for funding and appropriately recognizing the readiness that ambulance services provide. But it's also about the people. the EMTs and the paramedics that carry that pager are excited about serving others, providing exceptional pre-hospital medical care to our communities. EMT classes in our high schools provide us with an opportunity to find those people. Our program here at Morris Area High School began in 1995-96 school year. So we're in our 27th year. We've got 6 students currently enrolled in our program that are already emergency medical responders, and they'll graduate in May, eligible to take that national EMT exam. We've had over 400 students go through the program over the years. We've also partnered with 5 other area schools over the years to provide training in their high schools. So the interest is there in providing this training. Right here in Stevens County, at last count, we've got about 30 people that are currently serving as first responders, EMTs, paramedics, nurses, doctors even, that got their start through our high school program. There's many more students that have gone on to similar roles across Minnesota and beyond. So in terms of recruitment, it works. We've found, however, that one of the biggest challenges in establishing and sustaining a program like this is, of course, the cost. It truly takes a partnership between an EMS education program and the local school district, and at some point it becomes cost prohibitive. Even at a reduced cost to the school like we provide, I know that one of the barriers of getting kids enrolled in the program is the price tag to the school district. So instead of 20 to 25 students in a class where we have been in previous years, now we're under 10, even some years as low as 5. When we look at this issue statewide, with adequate funding, we could more effectively attract students to the program, which in turn provides our communities an opportunity to address this ongoing recruitment issue. The most recent statistics show that 60% of EMTs in our state are not currently working on an ambulance. That should be a major cause of concern for all of us. These folks are the backbone of the EMS system, and we're at risk of putting our communities in a situation where when they call for 911, we gotta ask ourselves, is there gonna be someone there to respond, to help? The funding that this bill provides can really be an effective piece of that EMS sustainability puzzle. So in closing, I thought rather than sharing any more of my opinions on the program, which it's a great opportunity, but I thought I'd share some of the feedback we've received from some of our former students. One student said it was a life-changing experience. Another student says, to this day, I still use the skills I learned in this class. I'm so thankful for the opportunity. And finally, another student says that taking the EMT course was definitely one of the best decisions I have ever made. Not only has this helped me with self-confidence, but also how to react to life situations. It was by far one of my favorite classes in my high school career. So with that, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this is really important legislation. I thank you for your time and thank you for your support of this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Fisher, and I'll add Morris to the list. Thank you very much. Next on my list is Lee Anderson, a teacher in District 196. Mr. Anderson, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chairman. My name is Lee Anderson. I am a teacher at District 196, which involves Apple Valley, Eagan, and Rosemount. I'm a product of a high school program, health careers program, and I've been in EMS for 40 years. This is my 40th year. Been teaching EMS here in the district, which draws from 5 high schools for the last 25. And as Director Fisher stated, did a count, and we have 300 graduates, alumni working in the EMS field in the state and actually throughout the country. So we're feeding into that too. I took a survey of the 24 high school programs that exist now. And the troubles there, we always make everything work. Those of us who train these students, train them to work next to us in the ditch, so to say. We always make everything work, but it's kind of silly when we're making scarecrows as patients to practice on, or finding a store mannequin to be our patient. Most of the programs are in need of just updated equipment. The FDA just put the kibosh on a lot of our old equipment. We can't get supply, we can't get replacement parts or diodes in lights that we need for them anymore. So we're a lot of the programs are in a pretty big crunch to gain some equipment that's just used in the regular programs. We have a number of programs are also stressed by spending $40, $45 on a background check on 17-year-olds who aren't going to show up anyway on the background check. So it's kind of $40 times 50, 60 kids is a big chunk of money out of our budgets. And we're kind of concerned about that. But again, most of the issues from our my cohorts and other programs is just we need to update things. We need mannequins that look human, that don't look like a blonde girl from Norway, as most of the Annies have been. We need to diversify those things for our students too. So I guess we are, I'm saying that the folks, 88% of the, you have an 88% chance of being helped by a basic life support, which in Minnesota is the emergency medical responder or an EMT, which is what we're teaching in the high school. And those kids may not stay in my community, but they're going to go get to the VOTEC. They're going to become teachers. They're going to become nurses, and they're going to settle in their community and realize, yeah, I did that in high school. I think I can be part of the EMS response for the fire department or the local ambulance squad. And the chances are they're needed, and they're hired in a heartbeat. And I thank you for your time and attention at this. And I thank you. If you have any questions, please don't hesitate to ask us.
Mr. Anderson, thank you. With that, I'll add Rosemount to my summer tour of Minnesota as well. Thank you. Maybe I can get Representative Hewitt to buy me a cup of coffee. Who knows?
Good.
Members, when the hearing was posted, the public was provided with instructions on how to sign up to testify during the public portion of this bill hearing. We received no request for public testimony. Questions from members. Representative Mueller, I see you have your hand up.
Thank you, Chair Dabney, and to Representative Hewitt for this bill. But I such a huge proponent of education choice and making sure that our students are getting as much real life, experiences as possible. So I just had some questions about the logistics of the program. One of the things that is really near and dear to my heart is seeing for those who are interested in a program that could it be a substitute for a math or a science class or a health class, or what does that look like? And I didn't know if that would help maybe offset some of the program costs. I didn't know what that looked like, and I don't know who could answer that, but just some of the logistics of the program for that. Thank you, Chair Dabney.
Representative Hewitt.
Chair Dabney, Representative Mueller, great question. Actually, I'm going to refer this to Mr. Anderson because I know my son could have used this for a credit towards his graduation. So if we could call on Mr. Anderson to tell how Rosemount does it.
Certainly. Mr. Anderson, how do you do it in Rosemount?
At the present time, it's an elective. We have been restricted by the Department of Ed in figuring out how to make access to their required classes. Minnesota requires a health class, but at the present statutes, we don't qualify as a health class for that, or a science class. This is science. This is human beings at their worst and best, and we're not allowed to count those as a required class. But we would certainly love to, and it would open up so many more opportunities for the students.
Representative Mueller, follow up.
Thank you, Chair Dabney. And this, again, this is something that I know I've talked about with several of my other colleagues. Are we able to get more educational choice for our students that they're able to then have more personalized learning like this? And this is just a really great option for that. So thank you, Chair Dabney, and for Representative Hewitt and Mr. Anderson.
Thank you, Representative Mueller. Representative Erickson.
Hi,
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my question is for Representative Hewitt. In my Mille Lacs school district, the CNA course is taught and offered for credit through a relationship with Pine Technical College. So have you investigated that kind of commitment with a community or technical college so that the students can receive a PSEO or a college credit for this course?
Representative Hewitt?
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, I have. This is just one more stream I'm going down. Your program, I looked at it closely, and actually it's a great program. It's kicking out the CNAs. I would like to take it a step further and just do a core curriculum for CNAs and EMTs so they get both the training at the same time. And I am working with the tech colleges, but I'm aware of your program, and it's a really good program, and I'm glad that we continue to support that. That money comes in through the regional programs, and it's kind of a different scale. And we're not getting the numbers we need for EMTs, so that's why I'm looking at different approaches, and that's what this bill is about. Thank you for the question, though, Representative Erickson.
Representative Erickson?
Yes, just one final question for Representative Hewitt, because he knows about the OLA audit that was done of the board in particular, that will have to approve the program. So is it your intent to look more closely at the recommendations made by the audit, by the OLA, to make sure that the board is responsible to the extent that it's supposed to be and would be giving good advice for this program?
Representative Hewitt.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, yes, there is no question that we are going off the recommendations of the OLA. We have a big struggle there, a large lift, and I'm looking for support from all of you. This is so important to our state, and this is one of the things that came up is the lack of the EMSRB to react to recruitment and retention. And so we are going to partner with that audit basically as we move forward to make sure that we deal with our lack of EMTs throughout the state and lack of emergency services. So that's a great question. Thank you.
Any follow-up?
Well, just to remind Representative Hewitt too, that licensing is an issue, the renewal of licensing. So thank you for considering that. I know that you'll pay attention to it, and it's something that probably won't just occur this year, but we'll have to go into the next biennium. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And another question, sorry, Representative Hewitt, you're under the firing squad right now, but another question for you. I think this is a good bill. I struggle with it being offered in a non-budget year, but that's a whole other issue. But we do need more EMTs, and so ways we can work within our schools to help with that, I think, are good. So my question is, what other fields, I might call it that, have grant programs similar to this shortage field, such as law enforcement, nurses, the list could go on. Are there other programs like this now in our schools for grants like this?
Representative Hewitt?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Bennett. Interesting question. I have not been able to see them, but here's what I do know. I had a great talk with Mr. Anderson there and also with Mr. Fisher and other programs. These are entry programs for first responders. These are entry programs for our police officers, our nurses. The first training you have to get in any of those programs is some sort of first responder training. I'm trying to look at the core curriculum right now for CNAs so we can just merge the two programs, but I have not yet seen a similar program like this that gives a grant. And I do empathize with the fact that you did say this is not a budget year, but my understanding is we have a little bit of money. So I definitely want to have this considered because this is important to the whole state. So thank you for the question.
Any further questions, Representative Bennett? Any follow-up?
Mr. Chair, yes, thank you. So one more question that Do we currently, I'm assuming a course like this would offer CPR or that type of thing for students. Do we currently have any CPR program, you know, classes, whatever choices in our schools? Do you happen to know that, Representative Hewitt?
Representative Hewitt?
Madam, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, Representative Bennett, I know that my sons have went through one, but I don't know if it was recommended. I'd like to ask a friend in research here, do we have a curriculum? I mean, that's policy, so I'm kind of curious. That's a great question. Let's find out, Representative Bennett.
Ms. Pera, can you help with that?
Mr. Chair, members, I believe there is, and there is something in Chapter 121A, but I need to confirm that, and I'll get that to the committee.
Ms. Pera, am I remembering correctly that health standards are developed at the local level?
That's correct, Mr. Chair. Health standards are developed at the local level.
So could that, trying to get to an answer on Representative Bennett's good question, could that mean that some school districts would have standards that would include CPR and others would not because the standards are developed locally?
Mr. Chair, that's correct. Some districts do include CPR certification in their health classes. Many do not. So.
Okay. Thank you very much. Representative Bennett, any further questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's it.
All right. Thank you. Last on my list of member questions that I see at this time is Representative Kreshaw. Representative Kreshaw.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, can you just remind the committee, what's the motion and what's the path of the bill?
Representative Kreshaw, the motion is to, let me make sure I get it right, because I stumbled on it earlier, health finance, for them to be able to review this. And then... I think there'll be conversations as to the source of funding.
Okay. So, Mr. Chair, so we're not sure which budget it would possibly come out. So it could go to health finance and stay there and be in theirs, or it could come back here. Is that what I'm hearing?
That's correct, Mr. Okay. Representative Kreshaw.
Okay. So just a quick question for the bill author.
Certainly.
To the bill author. What exactly would change in our schools if your bill passes? Sounds like some of this is happening, but what exactly will happen differently if this bill passes and becomes law?
Representative Hewitt, just a little question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Kreshaw, I know I'm over the one-minute agreement that we've always had in committee, so I'm pushing it here. But anyways, I'm hoping that it's not mandated, it's not mandatory, but I'm hoping with the grant out there that high schools look at this more aggressively and start programs. Mr. Anderson's a level 4 teacher. If I got that right, that means a full-fledged licensed teacher. Am I right? Just shake your head, somebody. And a lot of times they're using level 1s, which I believe Mr. Fisher is a level 1 teacher. So I would like to see this implemented in all of our schools. And but I know that's a dream, and again, I don't want to mandate it, but my goal is to get more EMT classes because that will mean more EMTs and better response in the state of Minnesota. And I started this when I was 18, and look at me. So I don't know if that's going to get the bill passed or not, but that's kind of where it's at, Representative Kreshaw, but thanks for the question.
Okay, and Mr. Chair. Thank you. And so, Representative Hewitt, thank you for that. I believe in the bill, the appropriation at this point goes to MDE. So I would have to make sure that that's clarified on the target. The last thing I would say is I do appreciate the idea. I appreciate where you're going with this. And you open the door up for law enforcement as well. And I think that you could expect to see along its path the potential for trying to add the law enforcement component, because I think that could actually strengthen your bill. So with that, I will recommend a yes vote for myself, and I wish you well going forward.
Thank you, Representative Kreshaw. Representative Hewitt, is there a need to explicitly name law enforcement in the bill, or what I heard you say in the conversations we've had in other settings is in law enforcement, in the fire service, in the emergency response world, this is a necessary first step in terms of certification and preparation for whatever path you go on. Can you help me and the committee better understand that, please?
Mr. Chair, certainly. And this is a prerequisite in most cases, at least to the first responder EMR level, to go into law enforcement or into EMS or fire. All of our first responders, that's the whole classification of them. And I think in the future, social workers, all have to understand the scene, what's going to happen on the scene, and then how to deal with the patient the first 3 seconds you see them. And so we expect that out of law enforcement. They're usually the first ones on the scene. This is training that the schools want you to have going in, or otherwise they'll train you. So if you're a candidate for law enforcement, back in my day when I went, it was very competitive. And if you had this training, you were probably in the program. So, but I think it brings up a good question, Representative Kreisha. And Mr. Chair, this is a starting point. It's a starting point to entry level to that whole thing.
All right, thank you very much. With that, members, closing comments, any further comments you wish to make on your bill?
Mr. Chair and committee, thank you for the discussion on this. As all of you know, we need this. We need to do it together. I have to thank Representative Backer. He has been doing a dynamic job for me. Representative Mueller and I have talked a number of times on some questions in her area, but this is what's going to help us get there. And I know Representative Richardson actually has a son right now that's going through an EMT program. He might even be done. So I appreciate the robust discussion today, and hopefully I get a green vote on this. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hewitt. Before we go to a vote, however, Ms. Pera has an answer to the CPR question. Ms. Pera, if you would, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair members. It's not Chapter 121A, it's Chapter 120B, 236, does require districts to provide one-time CPR and automatic external defibrillator instruction between grade 7 and 12. And that kicked in starting in the 2014-15 school year. So some districts may be doing something more as part of their local health standards, but all are required to provide at least one-time instruction.
Thank you, Ms. Pera. With that, Representative Richardson renews her motion that House File 2031, as amended, be referred to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. Mr. Lee, would you please take the roll?
Thank you, Chair Dabney. Roll call voting on HF 2031 will now commence. Chair Dabney?
Aye.
Chair Dabney, aye. Representative Sandsteed?
Aye.
Representative Sandsteed, aye. Representative Kreisha?
Aye.
Representative Kreisha, aye. Representative Bennett?
Aye.
Representative Bennett, aye. Representative Daniels is absent or excused. Representative Damuth? Representative Damuth?
Damuth, aye.
Representative Damuth, aye. Representative Drevkowski?
No.
Representative Drevkowski, no. Representative Erickson?
Erickson, aye.
Representative Erickson, aye. Representative Feist?
Aye.
Representative Feist, aye. Representative Jordan?
Aye.
Representative Jordan, aye. Representative Marcourt?
Marcourt, aye.
Representative Marcourt, aye. Representative Mueller?
Mueller votes yes.
Representative Mueller, aye. Representative Richardson?
Richardson votes aye.
Representative Richardson, aye. Representative Thompson? Representative Thompson? Representative Walgamott?
Walgamott votes aye.
Representative Walgamott, aye. Representative Shum?
Aye.
Representative Shum? Aye. Representative Joachim?
Aye.
Representative Joachim? Aye. Representative Thompson? Representative Thompson? Aye. Mr. Chair, report we have 15 ayes, 1 no, and 1 absent or excused.
Thank you very much. With that, Representative Richardson's motion is approved. Representative Hewitt, Health, Finance, and Policy, here you come. Enjoy. Thank you very much for being with us today. Our final bill hearing, we will have House File 3891 from Representative Feist. Members, it's our intention to lay this bill over for further consideration and possible inclusion in a future omnibus bill by 11:55 a.m. Representative Feist, would you like to make a motion to move House File 3891 before the committee and to lay it over for further consideration and possible inclusion in a future omnibus bill?
Yes, I do, Mr. Chair. So moved.
Thank you very much. With that, Representative Feist, please introduce your bill.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill will address the longstanding tension between education funding targeting low-income students and our ability to address childhood hunger in our schools. Currently, we allocate funding called compensatory revenue based on the number of free and reduced lunch forms collected. When we initiate free meals based on state or federal funding programs, families have less incentive to complete the forms required to generate this critical funding. Thus, schools can be hesitant to accept such hunger aid. There are other reasons why it is difficult to collect the forms from all students eligible for free and reduced lunch, such as hesitation within immigrant communities to accept assistance that they are unsure if they are eligible for due to our immigration prohibitions on certain government assistance. A 2020 report of the Office of the Legislative Auditor on Compensatory Revenue highlighted the tension between addressing childhood hunger and the school funding mechanism. One of the OLA's key recommendations was to evaluate additional methods for obtaining counts of eligible students. When I discussed this issue with Superintendent Zena Skunvic in Columbia Heights, she emphasized how critical school districts in high poverty, like Columbia Heights Public Schools, are unable to pass, how critical this funding is for these schools, which are unable to pass higher levy rates to cover the cost of day-to-day operations. For example, in Columbia Heights Public Schools, the operating levy is $309 per pupil. This figure has not changed since 2005. The state average is about $1,000 per pupil. Any changes that decrease the district's compensatory funding will mean less support for students. As it stands now, the Columbia Heights Public Schools are facing a $1 million decrease in compensatory revenue for next school year. Joining me at this hearing is Leah Gardner from Hunger Solutions, Emily Gutierrez from the Urban Institute, and Dr. Renee Cornet, superintendent of the St. Anthony New Brighton School District, who will share her insights into how this Catch-22 plays out and why we must revisit compensatory revenue to ensure that we are funding sufficiently and strategically these extra supports for low-income students in our community. And I don't think I actually explained what the bill does in my little presentation, so I'll just explain. It's to create a working group, because originally I was like, oh, we can just legislate like better ideas, but it's actually incredibly complicated. And so we need a working group of all the stakeholders to come together and really look at better proxies for generating compensatory revenue. And with that, I will leave it to my speakers or the presenters.
Thank you, Representative Feist. Your passion is real and evident. First on my list is Leah Gardner, Executive Director of Hunger Solutions. Ms. Gardner, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and just follow with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair and members. My name is Leah Gardner. I'm not Executive Director. I am Policy Director with Hunger Solutions Minnesota. I'm here to share with you how our state's reliance on free and reduced price meal applications as a poverty metric for state compensatory revenue is coming at the detriment of students having access to school meals. For the last two school years, all students in Minnesota have had access to universal, worry, and stigma-free school meals thanks to federal relief. But schools have paid a price as they've struggled to continue collecting free and reduced priced meal applications. As a result, high poverty schools are understandably reluctant to utilize something called the Community Eligibility Provision, which offers free school meals to all students in high poverty schools with existing federal resources. As I've been able to connect with eligible schools, they are very eager to identify any pathway possible to be able to continue serving no-cost meals to all students. They know many families are still facing economic hardship and can't afford those meals. The result is kids skipping meals or schools racking up meal debts. But they worry about the continued need to collect meal applications. Of course, we also have the opportunity for Minnesota to step up and provide universal meals to all students in all schools, but again, with a continued pressure on schools to collect meal applications all the same. Fortunately, there is a solution. Other poverty metrics exist, and I'd argue better ones. The truth is that free and reduced priced application data has always been a less than ideal proxy for poverty. It's optional and self-reported income data without rigorous verification. Let's catch Minnesota up to other states using various combinations of data from other means-tested programs, census data, et cetera. With the ability to provide sorely needed school meals to students in need on the line, this will remain an urgent challenge going into the next school year and beyond. We owe it to our schools and students to move as quickly as possible from acknowledging this problem to identifying and acting on any number of solutions available to us. Thank you so much for your attention to this critical issue.
Thank you very much, Ms. Gardner. Next, Dr. Renee Cornell, Superintendent of the St. Anthony New Brighton School District. Superintendent, welcome back to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is Renee Cornet, and I'm the superintendent for St. Anthony New Brighton Schools. First, I'd like to thank Representative Feist for sponsoring House File 3891, and I appreciate this opportunity to testify on this important bill on behalf of St. Anthony New Brighton Schools, as well as the Association of Metropolitan School Districts, otherwise known as AMSD. As a district committed to the success of all students by establishing high expectations and high support, providing reliable access to nutritional food is the ultimate level of support. I've been an educator for more than 20 years, and it is without a doubt that food insecurity is a detriment to learning. Furthermore, the use of compensatory dollars provides focused funding for schools impacted by poverty. Since March 2020, our district has been able to provide breakfast and lunch to all our students. Obviously, this has had an immense impact on our children. We've also seen an impact with our families. Every parent wants to feed, clothe, and provide shelter to their children. Having the guarantee of food for all children means no child and no family has to fear that hunger. There have not been many positives during the pandemic, but knowing our children were fed provided a level of comfort during a time when comfort was hard to come by. Prior to March 2020, our district provided free and reduced lunch to roughly 30% of our students. To access this program, families were required to fill out forms that were not only difficult, but really lacked some intuitiveness. I'm going to go out on a limb and be vulnerable here, but I actually, to try to understand the form, I tried to fill it out myself. I'm not going to lie, I'm an extremely overeducated English speaker, and I had asked my husband for help, and that's super embarrassing. So not only is this form unwelcoming, there is a culture of fear within our immigrant communities. They have shared with me directly that any form that requires information that goes to the government asking for certain data, it's not only intimidating, but it creates fear. Many of the families that are immigrants here in my community, they've left their countries because of this type of fear. By removing this barrier has allowed our children's access to two solid meals a day. Now, the flip side of ensuring meals to students has been this inaccurate calculation of compensatory dollars. Super difficult to get our families to fill out those forms. But with food provided to all, which is awesome, filling out the form became obsolete. Now, I want to go back a few years. As a superintendent, I was actually interviewed by the evaluation team that created the report on the compensatory education revenue. And in their report, as Representative Feist articulated, they addressed some of the issues. One of them being 70% of districts surveyed, they indicated challenges with the forms. And specifically, that not all families who should complete the forms actually complete that form. This results in an undercount of qualifying students, which in turn lowers a district's compensatory revenue. Now, personally, I liked reading this one section. It says, a second challenge, this is a quote, is that school districts spend a great deal of time and resources to obtain completed forms. For instance, the superintendent from one district, that was me, said school principals and staff from district's nutritional services department actually made personal phone calls to families that had not completed the form. And in talking to a much larger district like St. Paul Public Schools, not only do they pay the staff to run a phone bank that would encourage the filling out of those forms, they actually hire specific staff members to help with the form completion. Now, here's the paradox. And I looked that word up. So how is this situation we're in right now, this by providing reliability of food, consequently reduces our opportunities for students via compensatory funding? For example, in my super small district, the majority of our compensatory dollars, they go to providing English language instruction and support. So why should we have to make that choice? We can feed our children, but then not have an opportunity for funding on our English language learners, or we provide the funding for English language learners, but we increase student food insecurity. Philosophically, we have a paradox, right? Quote, a paradox, a statement, problem that appears to produce two entirely contradictory outcomes, but they're possible to come together. So the reason here in St. Anthony New Brighton School supports House File 3891 is because this bill sees what is possible. I believe, I mean, I'm an educator, right? That when people are asked to come together toward a common goal, it can accomplish anything. This bill states that a legislative working group would be asked to identify the appropriate eligibility metric for calculating compensatory revenue. Now, does anyone remember the movie or when it actually happened, but Apollo 13, remember the astronauts, they're stuck in space, they don't have any oxygen, they're wondering if they're ever gonna get home. And on the ground, the engineers got together and they were given a box, and this box had stuff in it. And the challenge was to take this box of stuff and figure out how to legitimately get a square peg into a round hole. And they were told failure was not an option. Those engineers went to work, and the astronauts ultimately, as we know, had access to the oxygen and they came back home safely. I feel the same way about this bill. We can access what is best about food security and compensatory funding to ensure our students receive what they need to become educated and ethical citizens. St. Anthony New Brighton Schools and the Association of Metropolitan School Districts supports House File 3891 because it will allow this work group to navigate the complexities within the situation. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Superintendent Cornet. Last on my list of testifiers is Emily Gutierrez from the Urban Institute. Ms. Gutierrez, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Dabney. Members of the committee, good morning. My name is Dr. Emily Gutierrez, and I'm a research associate at the Urban Institute, which is a research organization dedicated to developing evidence-based, nonpartisan insights that improve lives and strengthen communities. The views expressed today are my own and should not be attributed to Urban, its trustees, or its funders. I'm here today to provide some context on House File 3891 and the challenge Minnesota is facing with compensatory revenue. Minnesota allocates compensatory funding to districts based on student economic disadvantage and measures this disadvantage using the share of students receiving free and reduced price meals. Recent changes to the National School Lunch Program have expanded access to free school meals, removing stigma and improving academic and behavioral outcomes. These changes also mean that students no longer need to submit forms to receive subsidized meals, making reported shares of free and reduced price students a less reliable measure of student need. When school funding is based on these forms, the expansion of free meal programs could lead to an undercount of students in need, a loss of compensatory funds, and unnecessary administrative burden for district personnel. The use of this measure in state funding formulas has been a relatively common practice, not because it is necessarily an accurate measure of student poverty, but because it is available and has existed for years. However, over the last decade, several states have begun to adopt new measures with fewer ties to meal forms. 10 states are using measures that don't rely on meal forms at all, and 7 states are supplementing meal form counts with additional data. For example, my urban colleagues and I were recently contracted by a Colorado legislative committee to conduct stakeholder interviews and data analysis to assess other potential measures. Colorado will soon begin measuring student need based on student participation in social safety net programs and neighborhood data, rather than relying on meal forms. In conclusion, the way policymakers measure economic disadvantage has consequences for students and the resources that they receive. The National School Lunch Program has changed, and it will continue to change, meaning continued use of a measure that is so closely tied to these changes will continue to have consequences for low-income students and their school districts. Thank you again to the committee for the opportunity to share with you all today, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Dr. Gutierrez. When the hearing was posted, the public was provided with instructions on how to sign up to testify during the public portion of the bill hearing. We did receive one request for public testimony. from Matt Shaver, Policy Director of Ed Allies. Mr. Shaver, welcome back to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Chair Dabney, members of the committee, good morning. My name is Matt Shaver, and I'm the Policy Director at Ed Allies. I'm here to testify in support of House File 3891. I want to thank Representative Fleiss for her leadership and vision in trying to improve the way compensatory revenue works in our state. Compensatory revenue is not working well in our state in a number of ways. There are inequities in how we generate, calculate, distribute, and use the funding. House File 3891 gets at a key component of what is broken with compensatory revenue, how we determine who generates it and how they do that. As you've heard today, basing this funding stream on mill forms literally worth more than their weight in gold to schools creates a host of consequences and challenges for families and schools, leading to a volatile funding stream. It is families in poverty who are implicitly blamed when schools make budget cuts due to a drop in compensatory revenue. It is school leaders spending their time hunting down forms when they could be doing literally anything else to support their schools. It is critical nutrition programming, like the community eligibility provision, that is underutilized in our state because of a not entirely unreasonable fear that providing universal meals will result in fewer forms being turned in. Feed children or increase school funding. The system we have set up for compensatory revenue forces school leaders to make that perverse choice. It doesn't have to be that way. An inclusive working group, as proposed in this bill, is a way out of this unacceptable status quo. We urge the committee to include House File 3891 in its omnibus bill and the legislature to get this done. Thank you all for your time today, and thank you all for your public service to our state.
Thank you, Mr. Shaver. Member questions. Chair is going to take the opportunity. Dr. Gutierrez, Minnesota uses the free and reduced price lunch count as the determinant of compensatory aid. Is it a matter for this working group to find the one different measure? Is it a matter of, from your understanding of the research, a matter of looking at multiple measures that can be selected? Can you help me think more about that, Doctor?
Sure, thank you, Chair Dabney, for that question. There are several options that states can look at to replace free reduced price lunch meal format counts. A very popular one is using the share of students that are directly certified for free meals via their participation in state social safety net programs such as SNAP, TANF, or Medicaid. Others also use that as well as supplementing with neighborhood characteristics where the student lives. So in an effort to catch any students who might not participate in those state safety net programs, but would still be eligible or would otherwise receive free meals. There's a number of options that can be used. And I think it really depends on Minnesota's context and how Minnesota feels about those particular measures and how they fit in their state.
Thank you, Dr. Gutierrez. Representative Erickson, I see you have your hand up. Thank you for your patience.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this question is for Representative Feist, the author. You know, Representative Feist, MDE is already looking at other options, and there also is in statute another option, and I think Ms. Gutierrez just referred partially to it. So why would your study group focus only on raising revenue rather than reforming what compensatory is intended for, and that's to raise academic achievement?
Representative Feist.
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Erickson. So yes, as Ms. Gutierrez mentioned, there is now a mechanism for Medicaid to be taken into account. But the goal of this is not to necessarily raise the amount of compensatory revenue, it's to more accurately target it towards students who we intend it to target. And so my understanding in meeting with a lot of experts and stakeholders is that the first step forward in doing that is to create a working group that has all of the voices in the same room, all of the expertise, to just look at a better measure for compensatory revenue. And I think that the next step would be then to look at what are we trying to do? And the OLA report had a lot more to it in terms of revisiting compensatory revenue and understanding better what it does, like how effective is it? What are we trying to accomplish and for whom? And so that would be the next step after we just look at this specific issue of the proxy.
Representative Erickson, follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, just a comment that, you know, compensatory was, it's part of the
let's see, looking at the statute, it's part of the basic skills or mastery of learning section. So, you know, we really have to focus on the academic achievement as the primary result of having created this compensatory revenue. And so in addition to looking at all the sections that are recorded under that part of the law, we also should consider the inequity that occurs because of the way the formula is designed. But first and foremost, I hope that you will make academic achievement. If the study group goes forward, I would hope that would be a part of your study group, because that's most important to us, is having created this compensatory so that we would improve academic achievement and close the achievement gap. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Representative Youakim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Feist, for bringing forward this bill. I think one of the most important things we have to do to begin with is to figure out how we're calculating how the need is there. We're doing this with the LGA formula in taxes as well, as trying to figure out what is the best and accurate way to measure need. And I think trying to figure out the accurate way to measure need among our schools is where we have to start. And I think this working group would go a long way to doing that. And I really do appreciate that.
Thank you, Representative Youakim. Last on my list of member questions, Representative Kresha.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. End of the bill, author. In your working group, how do you anticipate addressing and calculating the inequities of the compensatory revenue statewide? Do you think that will be part of this calculation?
Representative Feist.
Yep, thank you, Representative Kresha and Chair. I think the point of compensatory revenue is to address educational inequities and the opportunity gap that exists. And the point of it is to target students who are most in need. But to agree with Representative Erickson, like, the point is to figure out, like, what is the goal here? Who are we trying to reach? And I actually introduced another bill last year that would require that this compensatory revenue be spent on evidence-based practices that have been proven to address the opportunity gap. So I think I agree with you in general that what we need to do is really understand ultimately what it is we're trying to achieve with this part of the education budget. But to begin with, the very specific goal of this bill is just to look at the really problematic practical challenges we have in simultaneously addressing childhood hunger and targeting these dollars where we to the right students.
Representative Kresha.
Yeah, so follow up to that. Thank you, Representative Feist. So as I hear you talk about that, and I understand you have other legislation, but of course that's not germane to this. We can't have that bill fix this bill or this problem. So as you talk about this, and you're talking about understanding the how we calculate, and that we know that the statewide average is 555, but certainly in the metro area, that's way much higher on the lower side. The non-metro is 432. So if we're talking about how, you know, understanding how those dollars are generated, wouldn't it make sense to also understand how we can fix those disparities?
Representative Feist.
Thank you for the question. In discussing this with stakeholders, the advice that I received from the experts that I met with was that we should start with this very specific issue that we're trying to address here, which is urgent and practical, and that we then should look at the bigger picture, and we should, sorry, I'm getting too many texts on my screen. Then we take a step back and we look at that bigger picture, and we really try to understand what this very large part of our education budget is trying to achieve and making sure that we're doing it in a strategic way.
Representative Kresha.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the bill author, so just, and again, these are just suggestions as this is gonna go forward. As you talk to your stakeholders, perhaps maybe you might suggest to them as well, you know, we already are looking at the achievement pieces and how the educational outcomes are there. So I think that's a big part of what should be added to this, and not just look at how we get the money first and then how we spend it, which brings me to the other point. And that is, you mentioned it targeted. I think that it would be really good, a really good suggestion for this working group and to talk amongst your stakeholders to make sure that there are pieces in place so that schools couldn't be encouraged to put high concentration of students to move them around buildings, and to find ways to basically leverage the compensatory formula for just dollars. Again, our goal should be to reach academic goals and to help these students achieve. And I don't believe the goal should just be to figure out how the best way to monetize a program would be for a school district. So I hope that helps, and good luck with your bill.
Thank you, Representative Krisha. I see Representative Jordan has her hand up now. Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Feist, for bringing this bill forward. I think it really comes to solving one of our fundamental problems. As we heard from Ms. Gardner, there are schools that are not participating in free meal programs because they are worried about the effect that it will have on their compensatory aid. In real, just backing that up, that means that there are children in Minnesota who are not receiving food because of problems that the legislature and that our state government has created with the way compensatory aid is calculated. I think that's a problem. I think that's something that we can address, and I'm very glad that Representative Feist is taking actions to do so. So thank you for bringing this bill forward.
Thank you, Representative Jordan. With that, Representative Feist, any closing comments?
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Krisha, I don't remember if you voted for my bill, HF 1144, but it addresses a lot of the issues that you were raising today. So I think that there are a lot of paths that we need to take to address compensatory revenue. The Office of the Legislative Auditor's report was massive. So there are a lot of steps we need to take to do better. And I'm excited to have presented this bill to take this important first step in revisiting how we measure or what proxy we use for compensatory revenue. And I hope everyone can support it today. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Feist. With
Mr.
that,
Chair.
Oh, Representative Krisha.
I'm sorry. Representative Feist, I don't think there was any ill will in your comment, just a reminder to the body, how we vote on other bills is not germane, nor should be brought up. Those are separate issues.
Thank you, Representative Krisha. The custom and usage in the body is, of course, to provide authors a broad opportunity to advocate for their bills and build a base of argument. And Representative Feist has done quite a bit of work in the area of compensatory, making sure that we have accurate counts, which goes to today's bill, to generate, to using the formula, as well as looking at how that funding is then distributed and how it is used. So thank you for your comment, however. Representative Feist, is your hand up again?
It is, yeah. I just wanted to say, definitely, I didn't mean it in a snarky way. I was just agreeing with Representative Krisha, because my other bill looked at making sure that the school, it looked at a lot of the issues that he was raising. So I didn't mean it in a strange way. I was just saying that I agreed with him. So.
Thank you. With that, Representative Feist renews her motion to lay over House File 3891 for possible inclusion or for further consideration at a later date. With that, members, we'll see you tomorrow. We are adjourned.